about us rage undeclared wars, military and economic. All about us grow more deadly armaments, military and economic. All about us are threats of new aggressions, military and economic. There comes a time in the affairs of men when they must prepare to defend not their homes alone, but the tenets of faith and humanity on which their churches, their governments, and their very foundations are set. The defense of religion, of democracy, and of good faith among nations is all the same fight. To save one, we must now make up our minds to save all. And we know what might happen to us of the United States if the new philosophies of force were to encompass the other continents and invade our own. We, no more than other nations, can afford to be surrounded by the enemies of our faith and our humanity. Fortunate it is, therefore, that in this Western Hemisphere, we have under a common ideal of democratic government a rich diversity of resources and of peoples functioning together in mutual respect and peace. That hemisphere, that peace, and that ideal, we propose to do our share in protecting against storms from any quarter. Our people and our resources are pledged to secure that protection, and from that determination, no American flinches.
Ad una conclusione, anche perché in un fatto estremamente attuale, qual è la guerra di Spagna, noi siamo ai lati opposti della barricata. Essi desiderano la vittoria di Barcellona, noi viceversa desideriamo e vogliamo la vittoria di Franco.
We cannot forget that whilst it takes at least two to make a peace, one can make a war. And so, until we can come to clearer understandings when all political tension is swept away, we must be in a position to defend ourselves from attack, whether that attack be on our land, our people, or upon those principles of freedom in which our existence as a democracy is bound up, and which seem to us to enshrine the highest attributes of human life and human spirit. It is for this purpose. For the purpose of defense and not of attack. That we are pursuing with unrelenting vigor the rearmament of this country. And that we are pursuing it with the full approval of the people.
An endless column of open cars, dirty gray juggernauts, mud splashed with frozen snow clotted on the windscreens, and robot-like figures of men sitting in them with empty faces of stone under gray steel helmets and goggles, with light machine guns held between their knees, pointing upward toward the rooftops and windows and sideways at the crowds which lined the streets, and little motorcycles dashing ahead to clear the path. And here and there a tank, an armored car, a lorry with infantry. And then suddenly the whole column stopped. Just a couple of hundred yards up the road, a tank had come stuck. It hadn't broken down. It had had to stop. For between that tank and the other cars, the people had suddenly surged forward and formed a barricade of human bodies. Civilians in black coats and in yellow Macintoshes, men and women, even children. And there they stood, solidly facing the German tank, holding each other by the hand, and they sang the Hroma Peklo, the age-old song of Slav defiance, which had always been hummed in secret by the Czechs while they lived under the tyranny of the Habsburgs. It went, Hroma Peklo, thunder and hell, your rage is in vain. The Slav tongue shall live, our name will remain. So long as our hearts for the nation will beat, we don't care how many Germans we meet. Even if they're as numerous as devils in hell, God will protect us. And the people cried it into the faces of the conquerors. Thunder and hell, your rage is in vain. The refrain rose up from the streets. And the low gray clouds poured snow down onto the square of St. Wenceslas. The commanding officer of the German tank column called for the police. The Czech police had to push back the Czech people. And meanwhile, the loudspeakers went on crying, citizens, remain calm. Citizens, avoid bloodshed. But the women in the streets shouted at the Germans, clear out, you swine. This is our country. We'll kick you out before you know it. The police struggled with the crowd. Some of the policemen tore their uniforms off and joined the people. But the people were unarmed. This was not resistance, just demonstration.
The facts as they are today do not change the facts as they were last September. If I was right then, I am still right now. Then there are some who say, we considered you were wrong in September, and now we have been proved to be right. Well, let me examine that. Ladies and gentlemen, when I decided to go to Germany, I never expected that I was going to escape criticism. Indeed, I didn't go there to get popularity. I went there first and foremost because in what appeared to be an almost desperate situation, that seemed to me to offer the only chance of averting a European war. And I may remind you that when it was first announced that I was going, not a voice was raised in criticism. Everyone applauded that effort. And it was only later when it appeared that the results of the final settlement fell short of the expectations of some who had not fully appreciated the facts. It was only then that the attack began. And even then, it was not the visit, it was the terms of settlement that were disapproved. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have never denied that the terms which I was able to secure at Munich were not those that I myself would have desired. But as I explained then, I had to deal with no new problem. This was something which had existed ever since the Treaty of Versailles. A problem that ought to have been solved long ago. Yeah. If only the statesmen of the last 20 years had taken broader and more enlightened views of their duties. It has become like a disease that has been long neglected. And a surgical operation was necessary to save the life of the patient. But ladies and gentlemen, after all, the first and the most immediate object of my visit was achieved. The peace of Europe was saved. If it had not been for those visits, hundreds of thousands of families would today have been in mourning for the flower of Europe's best manhood. I do not believe there is anyone who will question my sincerity when I say there is hardly anything I would not sacrifice for peace. But there is one thing that I must accept, and that is the liberty that we have enjoyed for hundreds of years. Which we will never surrender. Yeah. That I, of all men, should feel called upon to make such a declaration today, that is the measure of the extent to which these events have shattered the confidence that was just beginning to show its head, and which, if it had been allowed to grow, might have made this year memorable for the return of all Europe to sanity and stability. I feel bound to repeat that while I am not prepared to engage this country by new unspecified commitments operating under conditions which cannot now be foreseen, yet no greater mistake could be made than to suppose that because it believes war to be a senseless and a cruel thing, this nation has so lost its fiber that it will not take part to the utmost of its power. Yeah. interesting, such a challenge, if it ever were made. And for that declaration, I'm convinced that I have not merely the support, the sympathy, the confidence of my own fellow countrymen and countrywomen, but I shall have also the approval of the whole British Empire. And of all other nations who value peace indeed, but who value freedom even more.
Si è compreso a Belgrado che la presenza dell'Italia in Albania non nasconde la benché minima intenzione di ostilità verso la Jugoslavia. È vero invece il contrario, e cioè che dalla nuova vicinanza i due paesi amici trarranno, come nei nostri desideri, ulteriori elementi di solidarietà e di stretta collaborazione. Ed è in questo spirito che tra pochi giorni avrà luogo a Venezia un mio incontro col ministro degli esteri jugoslavo.
Si nous étions restés passifs, si le pays était demeuré inerte, si le gouvernement n'avait pas pris ses responsabilités, les affirmations de notre roi ne seraient bientôt plus qu'une vaine rhétorique. Tandis qu'aujourd'hui, notre force est plus grande qu'elle ne le fut jamais. La force française, savez-vous bien ce qu'elle est? Elle est cet ensemble d'armées magnifiques dont les chefs et les hommes instruits par une grande...
The whole of our national finances at the present time are governed and controlled by our defense expenditure. If it was not that we had to incur this enormous outlay for defense, we should be able to reduce taxation and to increase social benefits all round. But as it is, we have to bear enormous burdens in order to make Britain safe and strong and to enable her to use her full influence for world peace. I will not trouble you with many figures, but note these three totals, which show more clearly than anything else the size of the burden we are all carrying. 2 years ago, our defense expenditure within the year was 265 million. Last year, it was 400 million. This year, it will be at least 630 million. It is hardly possible for any of us to appreciate what vast figures like these really mean. 630 million.
A year ago, we had undertaken no specific commitments on the continent of Europe beyond those which had then for some considerable time existed and which are familiar to you all. Today, we are bound by new agreements for mutual defense with Poland and with Turkey. We have guaranteed assistance to Greece and Romania against the aggression. And we are now engaged with the Soviet government in a negotiation to which I hope there may shortly be a successful issue with... with a view to associating them with us for the defense of states in Europe whose independence and neutrality may be threatened. We have assumed obligations and are preparing to assume more with full understanding of their causes and with full understanding of their consequences. For we know that if the security and independence of other countries are to disappear, our own security and our own independence may be gravely threatened. And we know that if international law and order is to be preserved, we must be prepared to fight in its defense.
This is the regional program. Here is the fourth news, copyright reserved. The German Wireless announced tonight the German government's reply to a British communication and gave the German government's proposals for a settlement of the Polish problem in the following 16 points. Point 1. The free city of Danzig should return to the Reich unconditionally and forthwith on account of its purely German character and the unanimous will of its population. Point 2. The corridor should decide itself whether it desires to belong to Germany or Poland. For this purpose, a plebiscite should be held. Point 3. Those entitled to vote in this plebiscite would be all Germans and Poles who had been resident in the corridor since the 1st of January 1918 or had been born there. All Germans expelled from the corridor or forced to leave would return in order to cast their votes. Point 4. In order to guarantee... The German announcer who read out these proposals concluded by saying, "The Führer and the German government have waited for 2 days in vain for a reply to these proposals and therefore regard these proposals as practically rejected."
Someone had to be the first to dare to say no to Herr Hitler and bear the consequences. In spite of the untold sufferings endured in the last week by the Polish nation, no one in Poland regrets the fateful decision made by the government when it refused to submit to Hitler's tyranny. In saying no to the demands of an enemy intent on destroying Poland, the Warsaw government did not make a diplomatic move or a decision based on political calculations. It did no more than express the will of the whole people, which knew that there could be no other reply. The case of Poland is crystal clear, and that is why it has universal support throughout the world.
Diesen Augenblick erleben nicht nur Sie in tiefster Ergriffenheit,
es erlebt ihn das ganze deutsche Volk. Ich selbst bin mir der Größe dieser Stunde bewusst. Ich betrete zum ersten Mal einen Boden, der von deutschen Siedlern ein halbes Jahrtausend vor der Zeit in Besitz genommen worden war, da die ersten Weißen sich im heutigen Staat New York niederließen. Ein halbes Jahrtausend länger ist dieser Boden deutsch gewesen, war deutsch geblieben und wird, dessen können alle überzeugt sein, deutsch bleiben.